It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Hello, and thanks for joining me today. It is June 22nd, and we are now officially in summer. And one of the things that I have been enjoying just the last couple of days, I have a wonderful new patio set on my terrace in my apartment in New York City, and we love to eat outdoors when the weather is nice, and even sometimes when it's not so nice because it's protected. And sometimes in the summer here in New York, you get some thunderstorms, and it really can be lovely to be out on the terrace and see the weather outside and be protected from it. But it's really beautiful right now, and one of the things that I love right about now is the linden tree, which is in bloom, and it blooms here in my neighborhood in June, and it just started blooming a couple of days ago, and the fragrance from the little yellow flowers only lasts about a week, but I really, every summer, look forward to this, and there's one right underneath my terrace, and so sitting out there and having a meal and smelling the fragrance is, it is just perfection. So, not sure if you're familiar with the linden tree, but if you're smelling some sort of lovely perfume in the air right now, it could be coming from that. Okay. Well, I wanted to let you know about my new nonprofit organization, and it hasn't officially launched yet. I'm still fine-tuning some things on the website, but I've been telling people about it and leaking out little bits of information, so please go to the website responsibleeatingandliving.com. There's lots of great information up there, and I'm adding recipes all the time. For example, this morning, I made up a pancake recipe, and I put it online this morning. It was really great. Buckwheat pancakes, gluten-free, and we enjoyed them on the terrace, breathing in that linden tree fragrance. It was really, really lovely. But you can see the recipe, the pictures, all that information on the website, Responsible Eating and Living. .com. And if you have any comments or questions, feedback on the site, feedback on this show, please drop me an email at info@realmeals.org. Love to hear from you. Great. Excuse me. So this is the time when people are getting outdoors, especially in this area on the East Coast when the weather is really lovely. And it's a time when we're appreciating our fruits and vegetables more, our gardens more. This is really a great opportunity to get to know your food. And one of the things I like to do is inspire people, encourage people to make a difference. It's so easy to find things that are wrong, but how about participating in making things right? I was just recently invited to join a committee in my neighborhood to get a farmer's market going. And there are so many simple little things that we can do to help support local organic farmers, getting healthy, nutritious foods in our neighborhoods. And it really doesn't take much. It just takes a little initiative, and each one of us is responsible for that. So if there's something out there that you're interested in, that you want more of, think about how you might make it happen. And I have a guest that I'm going to bring on now, Jill Nussanow, who is also known as the Veggie Queen. She's a registered dietitian who has been teaching vegetarian cooking at Santa Rosa Junior College in Sonoma County and throughout the country since 1985. She's written the award-winning cookbook, The Veggie Queen, Vegetables Get the Royal Treatment, and she has a DVD called Creative Low-Fat Vegan Cuisine, as well as a new pressure cooking DVD on pressure cooking, A Fresh Look, Delicious Dishes in Minutes. Jill is a vegetarian, vegetable, and plant food expert, and she has several great websites, theveggiequeen.com, pressurecookingonline.com, and a blog at theveggiequeen.blogspot.com. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you for having me, Karen.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. It's such a beautiful day here today.
Oh, well, you live in paradise.
Well, yesterday paradise was pretty hot.
Really? Yeah, the weather's kind of been weird. I've been hearing all kinds of interesting things about Northern California these days, but most of the time it's pretty good there, isn't it?
I have no complaints.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for every day I live here.
Now, I was just reading a little bit about you, and I discovered you're from my neighborhood, from Long Island.
Where are you from, Karen?
I grew up in Dix Hills on Long Island.
Oh,
and
you're
from Woodbury.
Absolutely, 10 minutes.
And you went to Syosset High School. I went to Half Hollow Hills High School.
There you go. I went to school with Michael Pollan.
Oh, there. Oh, my goodness. What was he like?
He was like he is now, except geekier. You know, he was really, I mean, not only did I go to school with him, I shared a lot of classes with him. I rode the bus with him from first grade on, because that's when I arrived there.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. So you probably have some good insights on him. But anyway, you haven't taken the same path, but you both got passionate about fruits and vegetables. I don't quite understand why he hasn't gone all the way.
Well, you know, I heard him say on a radio interview that he thinks vegetarians are enlightened eaters, and I guess he's not yet been enlightened. My guess.
Well, whatever. I don't agree with everything that he said, but you know, he is doing some really good things about getting people more interested in fruits and vegetables. And the thing that I like about some of your taglines is about this creating enthusiasm for vegetables.
I think it's really important. You know, people kind of have always, I mean, not in my life, but in other lives, people kind of have dismissed vegetables like they're not important.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I consider myself like the consummate mother. Like I'm always saying, like, eat your vegetables.
Right.
In a really nice way. And
yeah.
I think people are kind of afraid of vegetables.
Right.
Like,
you know,
they don't know.
I'm really sensitive about all the marketing that's been crammed down our throats the last few decades. And we've been socialized in so many ways to think, we're programmed, brainwashed to think so many different things. And a lot of it is really subliminal and maybe not intentional. But we're brought up thinking that vegetables don't taste good.
Well, you know, a lot of people have probably had not very good tasting vegetables. And it's amazing when I see people at the farmer's market, which I'm lucky enough to go to in the summertime almost every day except Monday, if I wanted to. And when I see people taste something that they've been reluctant to try, and then they'll say, oh, that's good,
mm-hmm.
as if it was a big surprise.
Right. Well, there's nothing like a very fresh fruit or vegetable right from the farm that's been grown organically versus something that's overcooked and oversalted and in a can.
Canned vegetables, other than like tomatoes and maybe corn,
mm-hmm.
Are the worst.
They
just don't taste good at all. And even frozen vegetables, while they're an okay substitute, they really lack the vitality of fresh vegetables.
Yeah. You know, I've heard mixed things about both. and so I will mention them here. Now, certainly, if we have access to fresh picked vegetables from the farm, that is the absolute number one best in terms of nutrition and taste.
Or grow your own,
exactly. But the next best after that, fortunately or unfortunately, might be frozen vegetables, because a lot of the fresh produce that some of us have access to that's in a supermarket is not exactly fresh. We don't know when it's been harvested. It's been kept cold in a warehouse, in a truck, and then it's delivered to the supermarket. You don't know how long it's been there, and then it finally makes it to our home, and then how long does it take for someone to actually use it? So it's not as fresh, and it can lose a lot of nutrition. And sometimes frozen vegetables, which are harvested and then frozen pretty quickly after that, might actually have some more nutrition. But yeah, ideally, we should have more local farms and have access to as fresh picked food as possible.
I think so. I think that the food system, as most people know, is a little bit broken. And I think we really need more regional food systems.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are more farmers in areas that people can access. So that food isn't being trucked all over, and it might mean that we have much more limited supplies at certain times of year. But I find I teach in the wintertime, and it really helps me to have that, because it forces me to become creative with celery root and winter squash and rutabagas and the things that really are around.
Right. It's funny, I haven't thought about this in a long time, but I spent 2 months in the southern part of Munich in the early 90s. I had an opportunity to stay in someone's apartment who was out of town, and I was traveling around auditioning for different opera theaters trying to get a singing contract somewhere. Long story. And at that time, I think it's changed now, but I didn't have a car, of course, and I would go to a very small market for most of my produce. I think in some of the bigger markets and the farmers markets, there was a lot more variety, but it was the winter time, and that market, the only vegetables that they had were yellow potatoes, onions, and cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived on that for 2 months and loved it. I did so many different things with yellow potatoes, onions, and cabbage, but it was all locally grown, and it was good. I mean, those yellow potatoes, I love yellowfin potatoes, and when they're fresh and when they're organic, of course, they just have such a great flavor.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what you say is the whole thing is, like, you don't need an entire breadth of vegetables to have good food all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you had a carrot, too, that would have really upped the ante. But you know,
I think I might have found some carrots, but
it's just a funny thing, you know. We don't have to have a million different things. If they're available, you have them. If not, get creative, you know.
Right.
Find new ways.
Okay, so you grew up and you went to school with Michael Pollan. When did you really get interested in vegetables and a vegetarian diet? Were you raised that way?
No, I was a teenager, though.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend in high school who decided to become a vegetarian, and I hated meat, absolutely hated meat, so I decided that I didn't want to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really big meat-eating time in the world.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, meat was on the table every day. I also had a grandfather who had had a major heart attack in his 40s.
Wow.
And he had gone to Duke, and he was on the Duke rice diet, the Kempner rice diet. And so whenever he would come to visit, my grandmother would always bring his food.
Mm.
And his food was, like, she made this special tomato sauce, and she made this rice, with rice as the basis, baked potatoes, different vegetables, and I'd always want to sit next to him and eat his food. And so it kind of was, like, interesting. It didn't, like, really dawn on me, because, you know, you're a kid, and you just don't, like, really pay attention. But then I was like, oh, I like that stuff better.
Well, I'm kind of impressed that your grandfather got that information back then.
Well, it was basically the way to save his life. And my grandmother was a very good cook, and she made all kinds of vegetables, and was really meticulous about, like, making sure his food was really good for him.
Wow, I'm just thinking how far off track we've gotten. And okay, and that friend of yours, are you in touch with them, and are they still vegetarian?
Well, it's funny, because I actually hadn't seen him for many years, and I saw him a couple of years ago. He's living in Boulder now, and I told him, you know, you're the reason I became a vegetarian, and he said, well, I'm not a vegetarian anymore, and he told me this story about what happened and how he kind of went this particular way, and I said, it didn't matter to me. I was incredibly grateful that he had shared that with me.
I have a very similar story, and so I'm kind of laughing to myself, because I was in high school, too, and a friend of mine was talking about being a vegetarian, and it was just something I had never, it was that aha moment you talk about on your, somewhere I read. The veil was lifted for me. I never really thought about it, and all of a sudden, rushing in, all of these things started to have meaning for me, and I decided right then and there to be a vegetarian. And I saw him several decades later at a high school reunion and told him he was responsible for so much of my life's work. And then he said he had been a vegetarian for like a week.
Oh, that's funny. That's very funny. Well, you know, I think that's the whole thing. It's like you really don't know what's going to be the spark or what's going to happen. And I have to say, when I was a teenager, you know, moving to being a vegetarian in a non-vegetarian household was much harder. And it was an evolution. It didn't just happen right away. But if it weren't for that, I probably wouldn't have done it. And so it was great that I got that opportunity. I also was really into something shifted for me, and I realized about the health of food and how food affects your body. And I had never learned any nutrition up to that point in high school.
Right.
None. And I thought, you know, this is kind of weird. We eat at least three times a day. Why has nobody ever really told me? And so I kind of went off on a path studying some nutrition on my own, you know, reading what books were out there. And at the time, it was like the New York Times Natural Food Cookbook, and started cooking and exploring with ingredients and seeing what they were. I have to say, some of those initial experiments were barely edible.
Yeah, I've been there.
But my family was kind of, you know, they were okay with it. And after a while, I mean, I did perfect some things, like really good sourdough bread with whole grains, which was good. But a lot of things were kind of just so-so.
I think we all kind of evolved kind of together this vegetarian-vegan consciousness in cuisine. Many of us were experimenting and evolving, and now the food is just phenomenal.
I think things have changed a lot. I mean, when you see, you know, vegan, people touting vegan restaurants and talking about it on TV, I mean, it's just a whole different thing. And I think, you know, one of the things I like to do is I like to talk about just food. And if you make most of this food the majority of your diet and what you eat, you're just going to be so much further ahead, because it's real food. And that makes the biggest difference, I think.
Well, that's certainly a big piece of it, using real food, because so much of what people eat today is so highly processed, so oversalted, so oversugared, so full of fat and artificial ingredients.
And your comment about the vegetables not tasting good, well, if you're someone who's been eating, you know, fast food, and then you just eat a piece of broccoli, you may not be all that thrilled. It's just going to be such a huge shift. But if you gave yourself a month to, like, not eat that food and really adjust to the taste of real food, it could be, you know, a mind-boggling experience to taste
the
broccoli. You know?
Just about broccoli. I know. The thing that's so amusing to me is how passionate so many of us are about our fruits and vegetables, because, you know, we've had this experience and this joy that we experience on a daily basis, and we just want everybody else to have the same great time.
You know, that's pretty much what I live for. I mean, like I said, I go to the farmer's market. When I'm there, this morning I went to the farmer's market, and there's somebody who's growing kohlrabi, which is usually my stump the audience vegetable.
Yeah, we were just talking about it on Sunday. Purple kohlrabi.
Yeah, I love purple kohlrabi. This is green, and it's really beautiful, and it's really fresh. And this woman came along, and she said, I want all of those. And there were three big kohlrabi there. And she said, you know, I love them. And it's funny because the farmer, who I've known for 2-3 years now, told me that just like 2 weeks ago, he finally tasted kohlrabi. Hmm. He'd never eaten it.
He'd been growing it and never ate it?
Yeah. He's like, this stuff is good.
Oh, gosh.
I'm thinking, okay. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of what I do when I'm at the farmer's market is people ask me questions. I tell them what I think. But a lot of times I'm educating farmers about their vegetables, like sometimes they don't know exactly when to pick them or what to do with them, and it's kind of interesting. And I, you know, do a lot of informal education there, and I also learn a lot.
Yeah. So can you describe what kohlrabi looks like and what you do with it?
Kohlrabi is a really fascinating vegetable. It's a kind of a root vegetable, but it grows above ground. It's a bulb. And when you see it with its leaves on, it has these big, you know, tall leaves kind of that look like collards. Those I find almost completely inedible.
The leaves?
And I have tried, yeah. I haven't really found, what I say is they make it into my husband's green smoothie when I've run out of everything else to put in.
That's love.
Yeah. But this is the funny thing, what I really love to do with kohlrabi is I just peel the outside part off because it's tough. And then I like to just cut it up and put it on my salads or grate it and put it into something I'm going to ferment, like sauerkraut. Occasionally I'll cut it into pieces and put it in a soup or a stew or a mixed vegetable dish. But my absolute favorite way is raw.
And what does it taste like?
It tastes like a very mild turnip. It's a cruciferous vegetable. I think it kind of has, like, almost the same crunchy quality, but not exactly of, like, jicama or anything that has a texture like that.
Right, which is great because it's kind of crunchy, kind of juicy. It's a fun vegetable.
Yeah, and it's not too, if it's just picked at the right time, it doesn't have that, like, really intense, and this is the same for turnips. When they're just right, they don't have that really stinky, cruciferous vegetable quality that you get when you, like, cook broccoli or cauliflower or Brussels sprouts.
Skunky.
Cabbage. Yeah. It's sulfur.
Well, that's an important point. Picking food when it's ripe, and it applies especially to cruciferous vegetables. I know that so many people complain about kale and kale being bitter, and it doesn't have to be. And so many people are used to eating food that isn't ripe or has ripened artificially.
I think that's really important. That's why I either encourage people to grow their own if they can, or hook up with a local farmer, a CSA, community-supported agriculture, whatever you can do to get food that's the freshest possible. I see a lot of really innovative things happening in terms of that, where there's these mobile food trucks going to neighborhoods where people don't have access.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and things like that I find absolutely incredible, like in a beautiful way.
Right. Well, I was just talking about individuals making a difference, and why not get a truck and load it up with vegetables and sell it to people that don't have access? That's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. So, yeah, freshness really matters with vegetables and fruit, because most fruits don't ripen once they've been picked. So if you get strawberries that are ripe, they're ripe. But if they're underripe, they're not going to ripen while you're waiting to eat them.
I know. I didn't realize that. I get pears a lot, and they're kind of hard when I get them and I leave them out, and it takes about a week for them to soften up.
Pears are an exception.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, don't wait to get a ripe pear the day you need it. You won't. But there is a trick to that, actually. Pears ripen from the most of them ripen from the inside out.
Mm.
So if you wait, like I have a neighbor with a pear tree, and if you think the pear is ripe on the tree, it's actually mushy on the inside because it's overripe.
Ah.
So usually a pear will need somewhere between 3 days and a week to get ripe, and you get them when they're on the greener side, and then you kind of wait. But if you're looking for ripe pears at the market, the ones that are underneath have usually been there longer, and they will be more golden.
Mm.
And they will be closer to ripe than the ones that are on top.
Look at that. That's good to know. All these helpful little tips are really important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other one is avocado. You know, you usually can't get a ripe avocado the day you want it.
Right. And I just buy a pile of them and leave them on the counter. And they all seem to kind of ripen up at the same time, but
I know.
That's okay. That's okay. So other than kohlrabi, were there other fun vegetables that you found at the farmer's market?
Oh, today? Well, we're kind of in, you know, it's funny. You think the West Coast, we're further ahead, but my mm-hmm. sister lives in Maryland, and she has a place upstate New York. And the East Coast is usually much further ahead in terms of vegetable production.
Hmm.
So right now we kind of have a lull in our vegetables. We have, you know, kind of still the beginning of summer squash. And we have lettuce, but we're done with asparagus. We have no more peas.
Mm.
We're kind of in between, so there's nothing all that exciting right now.
Right. Well, I talk about my terrace. I have this small little terrace living in an apartment in New York City, and I've been getting into sprouting lately.
Ooh.
I know that sprouting has all that nervousness around it, especially with what went on in Germany, but, you know, I'm not going there. And I sprouted some sweet pea sprouts, a few weeks ago, and the roots were so amazing that I really just didn't want to toss them. And there were a few that I just decided to grow, and so now I've got six little pea plants growing
wow.
on my terrace, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of them. But it's so exciting to watch things grow.
Absolutely. Well, you must have grown them in soil then.
The sprouts I grow in water, and then
oh.
and then once they're big enough, I move them to the soil.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
See, I do sprouting, the water sprouting.
Mm-hmm.
And I love sprouting. I think, especially in the winter, it's a way to get fresh vegetables all the time.
So how do you feel about this recent hysteria that occurred in Germany?
Well you know, it's controversial. And if you talk to the USDA, they will say there's something wrong with the seeds, and that's why there's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I get my sprouts from a place called Sprout House, which is actually in New York. And I trust her, and I
yes.
trust the sources of the seeds, and I trust what I do. So I do not have an issue with sprouts.
I agree with you.
But I think everybody needs to choose.
That's right.
I don't buy commercial sprouts. I find that if I ever do, they usually get slimy in a couple of days.
Yeah.
Now, my sprouts, I grow in a special little sprout box, and my sprouts will last in the refrigerator for at least a week.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, I've kind of gone back and forth with sprouting over the years, and I just invested in this auto-watering sprouter unit and kind of having fun with it. And I recently grew sunflower sprouts in water, which I was never able to do, and they're like my favorite.
Well, that sounds really good.
I'm pretty happy sprouting.
I think growing anything just kind of changes your life. And I tell people, even if you can just grow one little pot of herbs, it just is so good.
Absolutely.
And I think people don't realize, actually, that herbs are such an incredible source of antioxidants.
Well, any dark leafy green is super powerful. And I've been growing parsley and basil on my terrace, and just to have those there fresh just perks up anything. To cut them in salad, and they grow like weeds, because they are like weeds, really. Weeds are just plants that we haven't decided to cultivate.
Or embrace.
Or embrace.
I gave a talk, actually, a few years ago at Vegetarian Summerfest,
mm-hmm.
which I'm going to be at in 2 weeks, and it was about superfoods. And I actually didn't know what I was going to talk about, and I ended up talking about my beautiful dandelion garden and, you know, how weeds really are some of the superfoods, and how a dandelion, which, you know, we consider a weed, it will do its best to grow out of concrete.
Right.
And so what is the will of that plant? You know, so think about what might be the nutrition in that plant if it has that kind of will.
That's right. I want that in my body.
Me too.
Jill, we're going to take a very quick break, and then when we get back, I want to talk about what you're doing specifically with encouraging enthusiasm in vegetables.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off! I said not to play it!
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny. That's not funny!
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the mama grizzly won't tear off your limbs. Cheater in the Rood. Thursdays, 8 p.m. Progressive Radio Network.
Are you struggling to survive the Great Recession? Frustrated by everyone from the big banks to the politicians? You need the Freedom News Hour Surviving Meltdown. We bring common sense to the chaotic world of bank bailouts, financial crises, currency wars, precious metals, and government regulations. Plus, we touch on many of the major news items of the day from a freedom-oriented perspective, and we aren't shy about our opinions.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Jake Towne.
And I'm Gene DiNardo.
It all happens Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. here on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. See you then, everybody.
South of the border.
Are you one of the millions caught up in that first world rat race? Well, I used to be. I'm John Mueller, host of the Expat Files, where we discuss what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire down in Latin America. Can you really live like a king down here on a crummy Social Security check? What about starting a business or buying a house or love and romance? Just tune in Monday and Wednesday at 8 p.m. and send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And to listen to any of my past shows, just go to progressiveradionetwork.com/archives and click on the link to the Expat Files. Nos vemos.
I kiss the smile upon her face.
This is Orly Cotel with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
Is a state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And if you're wondering about the music that plays at the intro and at the end of the show and during the break, and the music that I use in my food shows, which you can find at responsibleeatingandliving.com, they have all been composed by my brother, and he is in a jazz group called Batik, and they happen to be playing tonight at the Iguana in Manhattan downstairs, 240 West 54th Street, and I'm going to be there. It's at 8 o'clock. So if you're in Manhattan and you like jazz, join me, and we can chat about music and about vegetables. And they have great guacamole. That's the Iguana, 240 West 54th Street. Okay, so let's continue and talk more about enthusiasm with vegetables. Jill, you're like a Jill of all trades.
Well, that's what I say.
That just came to me. So you
I do a lot of things because I write, I speak, I teach. I do a lot of different things. It's not like I just do one thing.
Well, let's talk a little bit first about teaching cooking at Santa Rosa Junior College. Now, you know, you had mentioned in public school that you didn't learn anything about nutrition. I remember being involved in a home ec class in junior high school, which I don't even think they offer anymore. But there's people are lost in the kitchen. People are lost when it comes to cooking. Who are the kinds of people that take your class?
Well, my class is actually offered through, we have a culinary department at our school, and my classes have been offered to the general public forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody from 15-year-olds to 80-year-olds can take the class. And I would say about 10 years ago, I noticed that we had more people that really didn't know how to do anything in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my department chair, I think we need a class like how to boil water. And he said, we actually have one of those classes.
Oh.
And so it wasn't called that. It's like called, you know,
intro
beginning cooking basics or something.
Mm-hmm.
And people who get out of that class, it's an 8-week class, people who get out really feel so much more confident in the kitchen.
Well, you know, it's a crazy thing. I think, I don't know, when I was young, my mother cooked a lot, and I paid attention. Now, on the other hand, my sister has never really been interested in cooking, and I guess didn't pay attention. So part of it is some self-initiative and interest. But nowadays, I don't even think a lot of kids have that opportunity because so many people... working parents, mothers, fathers, they buy prepared food in supermarkets. I just, like, went nuts the other day in Whole Foods. Now, I love this store, and they offer a lot of great organic food, but the amount of prepared food that was there in the freezer, but also in the salad bars available to go, it was crazy.
Well, you know, I think Whole Foods makes a lot of money in those departments.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, but it's also important for people to have that food available at a much higher level than they would if they just went to Safeway or Albertsons or whatever the store is. So there's kind of a trade-off, but I really think people just need very basic skills to make very basic food.
Yeah.
And a lot of the younger students, there seems to be a dichotomy. A lot of the younger students have not learned how to cook from their parents. And a lot of the older people, maybe like there's a man who, you know, his wife died or something, or the woman, the husband always cooked and now he's gone, who just never cooked. Or there's a lot of women who are older who are like, I'm done cooking. I've cooked for 50 years. I don't want to do it
anymore. Well, there's the whole senior set. There's a lot of low-cost early bird options for them to eat out. And I know so many of them don't cook anymore.
So, I mean, I think, though, it's, you know, people always think, oh, you must make these gourmet meals. I'm like, well, you know, I cook a pot of brown rice, a pot of quinoa, and, you know, make a few different kinds of beans and cook fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Make salad every day, you know, and that's pretty much it.
Well, you know, I eat pretty simply, but there's a number of things that I do and my partner Gary that we do with the foods that we eat. When we usually do an interesting job with presentation, no matter what it is that we eat. So a simple plate of sliced tomatoes and basil looks gourmet just in the presentation. And then there are so many simple things with sauces that are just, you know, pureed, could be just one thing, really. But it's all in how you prepare it, and it's not hard. It's not time-consuming. It just requires a little, maybe a little skill, but just paying attention, really.
Well, I think that's the key, is that a lot of people haven't paid attention to what they're putting in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they wake up and they go, oh, I want to pay attention. And then they don't really know what to do, and they don't know where to start. And I'd pretty much say it starts with being able to boil water. because if you can boil water, you can cook grains, you can cook beans, you could cook vegetables. You know, I wouldn't recommend boiling vegetables, but you could steam vegetables. It's boiling water. And then, I teach pressure cooking, which is taking boiling water to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
The next level.
Well, let's talk about pressure cooking. I have to admit it's something that I don't do, and maybe one day when I take that leap, I will go nuts over it.
Well, I've had a lot of people write to me and say, you know, changed my life when I got the pressure cooker. And it really changed my life, too. My son was 3 when I got my pressure cooker, and I got it because I knew that I needed it.
Right.
He loved lentil soup. And I wanted to be able to make him lentil soup really quickly anytime. And it really takes 20 minutes from start to finish.
Mm.
Like from the first time, when you first cut the onion till you open the lid.
Mm-hmm. That's fast.
Yeah, I did it because it was fast. And, I was a vegetarian, and I wanted to be able to cook beans and grains really fast. And so if you have pre-soaked beans, you know, like black beans, kidney beans, pinto beans, they all take about 6 to 8 minutes at pressure compared to like an hour on the stove.
How did you first get introduced to pressure cooking?
Well, my mother had a pressure cooker, and so I knew what it was, but it terrified me. It was like the old kind, and it went ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, and it actually had one of those accidents where there was food all over the place.
Oh.
So I was like, I don't want one of those. But then I actually was in a writing group, and I heard the woman who was the leader of the group talk about her friend, who happened to be Lorna Saff, who reintroduced the pressure cooker. And when I heard about that, I was like, oh, I have to get one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a few years, and I did get a pressure cooker. And so I consider Lorna my mentor, and once I got a pressure cooker in my hands, I started to play with it. And then my students said, hey, could you teach us how to use it?
Right.
And so I've been teaching pressure cooking for about 15 years now. I just came out with a new pressure cooking e-cookbook, which you download, and it has about 140 recipes for everything from soup to dessert that I pressure cook.
And your website, that's pressurecookingonline.com?
Actually, that is not there yet. My Pressure Cooking Online website is in big need of a redo.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually at theveggiequeen.com.
Okay, great.
And
when you're teaching, is there like one particular thing where people really go nuts, or like a particular tip that you give where the veil is lifted, or anything in particular?
You know, I'd have to say it really depends on the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's different every time. Like, I just participated in a big fermentation festival, and I had 20 minutes. And I can barely, you know, open my mouth in 20 minutes. And once you get me going, it's hard to get me to stop. So I was like, what am I going to talk about? And my talk was how to use fermented foods in your daily cooking. Mm-hmm. And so I showed a variety of fermented foods, but what I really showed people to do was how to make this really simple miso tahini garlic sauce that you add lemon juice to and a little water. And people were pretty amazed at how it tasted, at just everything, like things that they just didn't know. So, like, that day it was all about, you know, maybe eating soy is okay if it's fermented. Or maybe it's, like, how to throw together a really simple sauce. Or, you know, maybe it's, like, broccoli never tasted this good when I cooked it.
What is a fermentation festival?
Ooh. it was an amazing event that happened about 20 minutes from where I live. This was the third year, and it was all about fermented foods. And many of them are vegan. There are some that aren't. But things like kimchi, sauerkraut, kombucha, what else was there? All kinds of other fermented vegetables, natto, miso, and kefir. I mean, all manner of fermented things.
Mm.
And so people who are into fermenting, all kinds of people actually, came and to learn. You know, last year I did a talk on how to make real pickles. You know, it's basically cucumbers, water, and salt. And garlic and dill.
And why do people want to eat fermented foods?
Well, your gut bacteria really needs them. And we do eat a bunch of foods that are called prebiotic foods, which are, the other ones are called probiotic foods.
Right.
They're the ones that are actually fermented. And the prebiotic foods spur your gut to make its own important things, you know, like let them ferment in a natural way.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are things like onions and garlic and Jerusalem artichokes and apples, oats, beans, real food. And so a lot of people don't get those prebiotics that make your gut work better. And so if you don't get them, then you go to the next step, which is like the, you know, yogurt or kombucha. I actually prefer the vegetables like sauerkraut or mm-hmm. other cultured vegetables. Because I'm going to push the vegetables every time if I can.
I love sauerkraut and I love pickles, but I'm really concerned about the sodium. I'm really getting away from salting my food. So is there a way to have them where they're not that salty?
Well, they do tend to be a little salty because in order to make them, you need some salt to help mm-hmm. the fermentation action go. But I don't add salt to my food, so mm-hmm. I might make like a dish of brown rice and vegetables and then just take maybe like a quarter cup of sauerkraut and put it on top. And it really just kind of, the reason I love fermented vegetables is because you get a variety, a breadth of flavor that you don't get other ways. And
yeah.
So it adds this incredible, I don't know, like umami, if I had to call it something. And so just putting that little bit of sauerkraut on will just make the food taste great. So it is a little bit saltier. Studies that I've seen, because somebody asked me about high blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
Show that the fermented vegetables and even fermented soy, the amount of sodium you get doesn't have the same effect as just adding salt to food. I don't know if it's true or not, but that's what I've read.
Well, I think part of the salting problem is that so many of our processed foods are salted, and food in restaurants is salted, and then people might salt on top of that. And I find sometimes that when you cook with salt, you don't taste it as much, and then some people may want to add salt to that.
Well, and what I recommend that people do is don't add salt when you cook.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what most chefs say. Don't add salt when you cook, but get yourself like a salt grinder or salt cellar. And then when you're done, if you want it to taste a little salty, you put a little salt on, and I mean a little salt. And then you taste that salt.
Right.
And so you use far less salt than you ever would any other way.
I agree.
And there's other things you could do, too, like using lemon zest or lemon juice or a little bit of vinegar that really boosts the flavor without the salt.
Mm-hmm.
And so. Okay. Now, what a,
you know, it's funny. I was thinking about the boiling water before, and in some ways it's hard to believe that people don't know how to boil water. But then I was thinking, a lot of people make their tea or coffee in a microwave or in a coffee machine, and so they don't even have to boil water.
Right.
And so it is probably true that some people don't know how to boil water. That was just something that, well.
Yeah, I kind of joke about that, but it can be true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and because I've had students who say, well, how do I know when it's boiling?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, when there's those big bubbles, then it's boiling. And what's the difference if it's simmering? How do I tell if it's simmering, you know? And so sometimes it teaches me to have students, because then I find out what people really don't know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that people don't know. I mean, not everybody, but mm-hmm. a lot.
So what are the basics for someone that's transitioning to a healthy diet with plant foods? What are some of the really basics that they should start with?
Learn how to cook grains and beans.
Grains and beans. And, you know, the great thing about grains and beans are they're really inexpensive. And you can get them organic, and they're still very inexpensive.
It's amazing how little it costs to cook grains and beans. And I use those as the basis of what I eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can afford to buy a little bit more expensive organic vegetables and then combine them with my beans and grains.
What are your favorite beans? Do you have any?
What day is it?
Yeah. There's probably a bean for every day of the year. There are so many.
I bet there is, and I'm really lucky because I have two heirloom bean suppliers where I live.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends, but I would say my favorite beans are, I love garbanzo beans.
Mm-hmm.
I love cannellini beans, black beans. I think that the better question is, which beans don't I like?
Okay.
And I'm not a huge fan of fava beans.
Oh, I love fava beans.
But I'll eat them.
Yeah.
I didn't used to really like lima beans all that much, but when I was doing recipes for my book, I did limas a number of times, and I was like, oh, those are really good.
Mm-hmm.
Kidney beans don't wow me usually, but in some recipes, they're wonderful. So I don't think I have one that I don't like.
Well, so here's the message, I think, for people that are kind of scared of beans. There are so many of them, and there's got to be at least one, if not 20, that you're going to like. So there are some that you may not like that have really particular flavors, and the fava bean I really love, but it's got this kind of like musty, I don't know how to describe it, flavor. Kind of funky, but I like it. And some people naturally don't like it. In fact, I think some people in some countries can't even eat it, that it can be really...
it's toxic.
Toxic, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there are some beans that have really very light, friendly flavors and some that have a lot more character. And the thing is to keep trying them. They're inexpensive. They're easy to prepare. And the thing is, they're so satisfying. So... when people say, you've probably heard this so many times, but I want to be a vegetarian, I'm eating, and I'm always hungry.
Eat or, more or, often.
Or I have a
more.
Salad and I'm not full.
Well, when I have a salad, I'm not usually full either.
Well, I usually say eat a bigger salad.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, part of it is what you do with your salad. If people think just throwing lettuce in a bowl is going to be enough, I don't really think so. So I, you know, my salads can be pretty exotic.
Mm-hmm.
Only in terms of what I'm willing to put in, which is almost anything. It just came to mind. I have this one salad that I make, which is called Sweet Summer Super Salad, and this is the time of year to do it. It has summer fruit, and the dressing is either raspberries or strawberries. I put in avocado and sunflower seeds, sometimes black olives, and something I've never put in, but it just occurred to me that might be really delicious, and there might be some just plain cooked white beans.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you just think nothing's off limits, and I think the other thing is adding some kind of natural fat to it makes a big difference, because most vegetables are very low in calories.
Right.
And so if you don't have that little bit of fat to, like, make it so that it's a little more rib-sticking, you're going to be hungry fairly quickly.
Well, also, a lot of those nutrients in the green vegetables are fat-soluble, and so they
right.
don't digest well unless you have some fat with them.
Right. So it might be making a dressing with tahini or, you know, putting avocado in or nuts or seeds or olives, which I almost always do.
Mm-hmm. Now, on your website, you call yourself an alternative registered dietitian.
And that's so people realize that I'm not going to have the standard dietitian line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a vegetarian for a very long time. I've taught vegetarian. I think a little bit outside the box. I joke that when I say, where is the box? But, you know, I'm willing to really look at alternatives and what is a little bit different that other people might say, oh, no, that won't work, or that isn't the way. And I believe in science, but I don't only believe in studies. I don't think a study really tells you how you feel.
Right. That's a really good point, that people need to be paying attention to how they feel.
Absolutely. And I would challenge most people to, you know, eat differently and see how they feel. And a perfect example is my husband, who's been drinking green smoothies now for, let's see, about 18 months.
Can you tell me what a green smoothie is?
Yes. It goes into my high-speed blender. It's kale,
mm-hmm.
A greens powder, a hemp protein powder, a few soaked almonds, and then usually frozen fruit. It can be fruit I froze myself.
Mm.
A banana or not, and it all gets blended up. And he drinks about 24 ounces of this every morning.
Wow.
And after a few months, he said to me, and he was only doing it 5 days a week, he said to me, can you do that for me every day? And I said, sure. And I said, why? He said, because I feel so much better when I drink it.
Yeah, green smoothies are really great.
And he's a guy who would skip breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to drink this in the morning has made a huge difference.
Well, you know, I tell people, especially those that think they don't have time, this is something that you can whip up, and if you're driving to work, you can sip it all along the way. It's a great meal.
Now, on the other hand, I don't care for green smoothies because I like to eat my food.
Uh-huh.
So for me, I'd rather take that same, you know, those same greens and put them into something and eat them, or make a raw kale salad or something.
Well, the thing is, when you're eating plant foods and a healthy diet, there is so much variety. And, you know, I like to tell people, if you don't like broccoli, you don't have to eat it. There are plenty of other great foods out there. And if you don't want to have a green smoothie, you don't have to have it.
Karen, I am completely with you on that. And my motto is, don't use what you don't have and don't eat what you don't like.
Absolutely. You've got to love what you eat.
That's what food is. Should be a joy and a pleasure and a source of nourishment in more ways than just nutrition.
I want to get back to being a dietitian. We only have a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
But I've met so many dietitians, especially, unfortunately, in hospitals, that really don't know anything about nutrition. How does that happen?
Well, I think they do know about nutrition. They just know about nutrition from a very different perspective than you would expect. And so there are probably people who know so much more about tube feedings. I mean, I don't know anything about tube feeding. They probably know about how many calories you need if you've just been burned. I don't really know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of specialize in well people, or people who want to get well, whereas some dietitians, you know, they specialize in people who have, like, are on dialysis.
Right.
I don't know anything about that. And so a lot of times it's like the same with a doctor. You know, you go into the hospital and you have the stomach ache, but they think it's your heart because they're a cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
Or the opposite. You have a heart problem, but it's the GI doctor's looking at you. It must be your stomach. And so I think that they know about nutrition, but maybe not globally. And I kind of look at it in a more global food-oriented way.
Well, I would still like them to know a little bit more about what's healthy to eat, because especially if you're in a hospital, you can't find, it's really hard to find healthy food, and that's the one place where you should be getting it.
It's changing, Karen. It's really changing. There's a group called Healthcare Without Harm, and they are working on getting more good food into hospitals where it really belongs.
I like to hear that, and I like to end on a happy note. So, Jill, thank you so much for talking with me this hour and for everything that you do. Visit information on Jill at theveggiequeen.com. And thank you.
And thank you, Karen.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Join me next week. We'll be talking about Wildly or Affordable Organic with Linda Watson, and we'll talk about how you can afford to eat organic. Thanks for listening.